Tonight, everyone, I'm going to call the meeting of the House Committee on Rules to order for Thursday, March 23rd, 2017. I'm going to go a little bit out of order because we're waiting on members to come in and out. So I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2873.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2873 requires governing body, a municipal corporation, to publish an ORSTAR notice of election involving local option tax measure or general obligation bond measure. You do have a dash one amendment. It directs the county or counties to file the notice in ORSTAR upon contact from the municipality with the bond measure.
All right. I see Dan and Lori coming up. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. For your record, Lori Wimmer, representing 44,000 members of the Oregon Education Association, here in support of 2873. Thank you so much for hearing it today. Because we often act as supportive partners to school districts when they propose local option and bond levies to voters, as well as to community college races, we have much experience with the current system and with its pitfalls. We've observed that in the interest of good government, it makes sense for individuals and organizations to know in a timely fashion what measures may be brought to the ballot in any given election. At the state level, this is done obviously through ORSTAR, and we get timely postings and are able to know from the point of circulation on what's coming forward. In Oregon's 36 counties, however, that's not the case. Though each has filing deadlines for municipal corporations and also requirements of public notice in the news media, there's no centralized source to learn of all the measures in one place that may come forward. Sometimes local news sources elect not to publish the notices, and frequently local entities make the final decision to go to the ballot after the voters' pamphlet deadline is passed, which then, of course, eliminates another opportunity for voters to know anything about those measures. So the consequence of the unreliable patchwork system we have had are several. Parties who are interested in the outcome of a levy don't always know that a school district or community college or other entity has put the question on the ballot in time to engage on the campaign. Campaigns for worthy causes may not have independent means to get that word out in an effective or a timely way. Voters may be asked to vote on proposals that have not had enough public scrutiny because of this information insufficiency, and no filing timeline congruity exists across all the counties so that we could unearth the total picture on any given ballot. Transparency and meaningful voter participation will be aided by asking that ORSTAR track all local election proposals just as it does state initiatives. We hope to do that in as effective and least burdensome way as possible, both for local taxing authorities and for the county clerks who receive this information. And I would note that we are working with the clerks on an amendment, which would be the dash twos that will be coming to you, to make this bill work for them. 2873 contemplates a streamlined process that will enable all parties to provide this information easily. We thank you for your consideration of this idea to help further the public dialogue about issues important to our schools, our voters, and our communities.
Thank you. Mr. Torres.
All right. Chair Williamson, Vice Chairs McLean and Rayfield, members of the committee. My name is Dan Torres. I'm with Oregon AFSCME. I represent roughly 25,000 workers, including thousands of local government employees around the state. Each local government has a different level of experience and expertise in running these measures and the administrative oversight involved. I'm testifying today in support of House Bill 2873 because we would like to add a level of standardization to the process. This would hopefully not only provide clarity but also make it easier for citizens to know when a measure is being referred and be able to obtain basic information about the measure in a centralized location. There are a number of bonds for libraries or public safety measures that are filed every cycle. A number of these tend to not get the media attention, or it's not as easy to find out about these. While this bill won't necessarily solve the situation whole stock, we believe it would make it easier for voters to obtain information and to engage in the process. Under current practice, when the state refers a measure, it goes into ORSTAR, which increases the ease at which measures can be found and information can be obtained. We feel that expanding this policy to bonds and local option measures would make for a system that is easier for citizens to access. For these reasons, Oregon AFSCME encourages you to support House Bill 2873. Thank you for your time.
Any questions?
I
Oh, yes, Representative Rayfield.
So I just was just impressed with Mr. Torres's testimony, and I'm not sure if you've worked in the building before, but if you have, whoever trained you and was your boss really did a good job. So I just want to commend you today for your testimony.
Chair Williamson, Vice Chair Rayfield, thank you very much for that. I appreciate the feedback.
Yeah.
Never ends. All right. Any other questions for this panel? All right, thank you very much. We will close the public hearing on House Bill 2873, and I'm going to open public hearing on House Bill 2211 and on 3140.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2211 requires all candidates for partisan office, regardless of political party affiliation or non-affiliation, to appear on one unified primary ballot with top two candidates advancing to general election. It refers the measure to voters for approval or rejection at the next general election. And House Bill 3140 establishes the people's primary election.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Representative Richvile, Shoals Sherwood, House District 26. And I'm here today with what is the perennial top two bill. I know I'm new to this process, and my naivete probably shows in the fact that I'm just here even advocating for it. I will tell you that since I dropped the bill, and having had the opportunity to talk with Representative Buehler about the experience that others have had with this concept over the last few years, I'm perhaps a bit more realistic about where things might go. And part of what I'd like to say today is, if this is not something that we feel like has a chance of flying, I'm certainly encouraged by and want to contribute to the efforts that Representative Buehler is making to at least make some progress in terms of trying to address the negative issues that partisanship can have for us, and give opportunity to those that are not registered with one of the primary parties in our system. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Committee members, for the record, my name is Newt Buehler. I represent House District 54, which is most of the city of Bend. And I'm here to talk to you about House Bill 3140, or what we're calling the People's Primary. And I'd like to welcome Representative Vile to the efforts at reforming our primary system. I've only been at this for over a decade with little sense of improvement, but I'm never willing to give up, and I'm here at my next effort. And here's the problem, which I've been trying to solve now for over a decade. We have a growing number of people who are rejecting the traditional two-party system. Now over 30% of voters don't want to be pigeonholed into either party. They don't want to accept those narrow partisan labels for whatever reason. I'm sure there's a variety. Either the parties don't respect their values, thoughts, or ideas, as one example. But it has profound implications with regards to those people's ability to participate in our elections. And I feel strongly that your party affiliation should not suppress your ability to participate in our electoral process. And it shouldn't be contingent on which party you want to be associated with. Our primary system and our electoral system in general should be inclusive and transparent, and I have great concerns right now with regards to our primary system, specifically leaving 30% of people out of any meaningful participation. So the solution is it contained, I believe, in 3140, and this bill is relatively straightforward. It would create a standalone primary for non-affiliated voters. Pretty much that's it, okay? Standalone primary for non-affiliated voters. Any candidate can participate in the people's primary, no matter if you're Republican, Democrat, or non-affiliated. And ballots will automatically be sent to all non-affiliated voters, and then any other registered voter in other political parties, but they'd have to request that ballot. And I want to stress three main points. This is not an open primary or a top two primary, as many of us probably have encountered that concept over the years. It does nothing at all, let me stress, nothing at all to the existing major party primaries. They continue to have the Republican and Democratic primaries and function completely as they do now. I believe that voter participation will be markedly increased in our in our primary, since those 30% of voters now registered non-affiliated will be participating. And for the first time ever in Oregon, we'll have equal access to our primaries for all voters. And importantly, there'll be no significant increased cost because all these people are already getting mailed a ballot in our primary system. They just don't have very many candidates to vote for right now. Of course, in anything like this, there are important amendments. And fortunately, we have some great legal minds in this state, as you're all intimately aware in this committee, specifically Dan Meek. And Dan has gone over his, including the present company.
That bill
just still. Give me a chance to express my appreciation for the knowledge of the Rules Committee. So, and I think Mr. Meek will be here later to outline some of his concerns. And actually, I happen to agree with almost all of the issues he's found. Let me just go through four amendments that we plan on introducing. We do have some confusion with regards to the constitutionality of the SOAR loser provision in not only this proposal, but also in our existing law. So we need to investigate that in a greater degree of detail. The second thing is we need to include an amendment in our bill with regards to how the voter pamphlet is outlined and developed. So right now we have certainly Republican and Democratic candidates, but we'd probably need a separate section in the voter's pamphlet for the people participating in the people's primary. Now, the third amendment that we anticipate is we left out a role for people registered as in the minor party. So we need to take care of that. And finally, we need to make sure it's clear that whoever wins the people's primary, how they are identified there in the general election. What is that nomenclature, basically, so that they are identified separately from the winners of the Democratic and Republican Party? And I think that needs some clarification. So in summary, I think the people's primary or House Bill 3140 will finally put to rest a problem that we've all wrestled with now for over a decade, and that's how to gain meaningful participation for non-affiliated voters in our primary electoral season. So with that, I'm willing to take any questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll start with the House Bill 3140. Can you just summarize again for me how this is different from, say, an open primary where I'm an unaffiliated voter and I want to request to vote in the Republican primary or the Democratic primary? Like, am I following correctly? Like, if I win in my Democrat primary, but then I lose in the people's primary, I could potentially not be the Democratic candidate?
So a couple of distinctions there. So it's not an open primary in the sense it doesn't impact the Democrat or Republican Party primary in any way. Continues on. So it's an own separate, essentially, third primary just for non-affiliated voters that any candidate can seek that nomination.
Follow up, Madam Chair. So what if I am the Democratic candidate in my primary and I lose in my I win my primary, but a person who's participating in the open primary who is a Democrat gets more votes in that primary. Do they become the Democratic Party nominee?
No. So, Madam Chair, separate. Yeah, so you would still be the Democratic nominee and someone else would be the people's primary nominee.
Okay. I'm sorry. I'm struggling.
I'll
get my
box.
Brain around
yes.
it. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So is this, like right now you have Democrat, Republican, and now Independent, so this would be the People's Party, so it would actually be four different parties. Okay.
Madam Chair, yes, that's correct. Yeah. And it would be so designated on the general election. Now, you could also, to speak to Representative Nosa's point, you could also be the Democratic nominee and concomitantly win the People's primary. Right, just like now, you can win the Independent Party and the Democratic nomination. Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, does that mean you can put your name on in both of those categories? Then, in the say Republican, you're running as a Republican in the primary, but you could also run on the other ticket as a people's candidate?
Madam Chair, that's right. Yeah, if you so elect, no requirement.
Madam Chair, Representative Barreto, that's actually one of the issues that Representative Buehler and I have been talking about, because I think Representative Nose is kind of on to something here. If you won the Democratic nomination and lost the People's Party, but you had also been in, won the Democratic and lost the People's Party, but lost the Democratic and won the People's Party, now perhaps you've got the first two in the Democratic Party going against each other in the general election. And that's where the, what do you call it?
We would have an amendment to take care of the sore loser. There's lack of clarity around that. But
I was thinking that sounded like a good idea.
Well, and to be honest with you, to be honest, I do too, because I think that does go to the sort of partisanship, the extremes that has been a lot of the criticism of our current system, is that we tend to push out to the extremes when we get our general election candidates. And this would help avoid some of those extremes from occurring, in my opinion.
I have a question about House Bill 2211. I'm sorry, I'm scanning the bill here really fast and I just don't see it. Would this top two system apply for our statewide candidates as well?
Yes.
Okay.
I apologize if you stated this, but to clarify, can somebody vote in a primary election for a major political party, Democrat, Republican, Independent, and also vote in the people's primary?
Madam
so
Chair.
They have to pick one or the other?
Madam Chair, if you're not affiliated, you'd automatically get sent the people's primary ballot. Mm-hmm. If you're registered in an official recognized political party, you'd have to request to opt into the people's primary. In that case, you would not receive the ballot of the party that you're registered in. We anticipate that.
A follow-up. Is there already a pathway for non-affiliated voters to put a name on the ballot?
Madam Chair, you have to go through kind of the independent route where you gather signatures, and it appears just on the general election ballot.
Very much.
Yep, thank you very much.
Ken Adams signed up for House Bill 2211.
Yes, my name is Ken Adams, and I'm not a representative of Marion County. I just live in Marion County. I lived in California before I came here, and I testified several times on this top two amendment that they were trying to pass at the time. Since I left, they've passed it. And last November, two Democrats were the candidates for U.S. Senator as a result. And this is what you're going to probably see periodically, is two candidates from the same party running for statewide office or other offices. Also, it does really, I think, bring about the end of the minor parties. This is going to be a problem. And one of the things I think a lot of people are starting to see is the two major parties are starting to split. You could end up with some real odd combinations. And as it was stated, they're trying to get more moderate candidates. I think you could get two extreme candidates if you have the top two. And the parties are starting to split now. And I think that's going to be a bigger problem in the future. And part of that is exemplified by the fact that a lot of people are opting out of the two parties. Now you have about 30% that are unaffiliated. So I think you've got a real problem with top two, and I would strongly recommend that you do not follow what California did. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions?
Yes. Good afternoon. My name is Dan Meek. I'm representing here the Oregon Progressive Party. I did submit written testimony on House Bill 3140, and I just put about 20 copies over on the table for those who don't have it. House Bill 3140, the people's primary, actually seems to be kind of a promising concept. In the written testimony, I suggest what I think are some necessary improvements to it. The way it's written, it is very easy for someone who's a member of a major party to become a candidate in the people's primary, but it's very difficult for anyone else to become a candidate in the people's primary. And I think that element of its drafting is inadvertent and is easily fixed. Under the bill as written, a person who is a member of a major party for at least 180 days prior to the primary filing deadline only needs to, you know, fill out a form and pay a very small fee, like $25 for state senator. On the other hand, anyone who's a member of a minor party or anyone who is a non-affiliated voter has to go out for a state senate race, for example, and collect 675 signatures from people who are living in the district. And you even have to sort those sheets by county in districts that are more than one county, because the law specifies that the county clerks verify the signatures and not the Secretary of State. So I think we should have a level playing field. Anyone should be able to get into the people's primary in the same way. The second point is that needs to be clarified what happens if a candidate is running both in a major party primary and in the people's primary for the same office and loses the major party primary. Under Oregon's sore loser law, that means that person is disqualified for running for that office on the general election ballot no matter what. So who is then the winner of the people's primary? Well, is it nobody? Is it the second place winner? So that needs to be clarified. I would say it's the person in the people's primary who receives the most votes who is not disqualified because of having lost the major party primary for the same office. A third, I'm suggesting that there be a separate section, either a separate voter's pamphlet or at least a separate section in the voter's pamphlet for these candidates. They not be mixed in with major party candidates for a variety of reasons. And finally, as proposed, this ballot would go to voters and would not identify any of the candidates on the ballot by party identification. And I indicate that party identification is a very important attribute to voters, particularly to, I guess, what's now called low information voters, or folks who don't have the time to be intimately engaged in the political process. Party identification is important. And so I suggest that be on the people's primary ballot, and that at a minimum each candidate's party registration should be stated in the voter's pamphlet, and also that there be an asterisk next to a candidate's name on the people's primary ballot if that person is also running for the major party nomination for the same office. People should know that, and also there should be a legend if the person is an incumbent. The way I see this mechanism, it's potentially a very useful mechanism for enlarging the political process and bringing in new candidates and new ideas. On the other hand, it could just be, if it's not designed well, it could be just a way for existing major party candidates to get a new label on the general election ballot. They would get the label, you know, Republican or Democrat, and also the people's primary winner. So I would suggest those four changes, and with that, the Progressive Party would support the bill.
Struggling just a little bit with the idea and the concept, because I was under the understanding that non-affiliated voters could put a name on the ballot and non-affiliated voters could vote for that. And so I'm just concerned about the cross-pollination that you're talking about. Why wouldn't it be more efficient to have non-affiliated voters put a non-affiliated candidate on the ballot instead of opening it up to major parties to be in that.
Chair Williamson, Representative Holby, I hope I'm understanding your question.
Under
current law, anyone can qualify for the general election ballot through petitioning on the state for a statewide office. The last I checked, it was something like something over 30,000 valid signatures for a statewide office. For a while, there were pretty severe restrictions on who could sign those petitions, but they were repealed about 4 years ago. So I think any registered voter can sign those petitions now. And then that person goes on the general election ballot with the label next to the person's name of unaffiliated. What this proposal is really to give people who are not members of major parties a bigger role in the primary election. And it envisions that with the people's primary, I think there will be a lot more candidates than there would be simply folks going out and collecting the 30,000 signatures statewide or the 5,000 or 6,000 whatever signatures would be required for a state Senate office, for example, or a couple thousand signatures maybe. But I don't know that answers your question.
Follow up. I guess maybe I was speaking to why don't we invent a process for non-affiliated voters to put a non-affiliated candidate in a primary against other, you know, separate from the major parties or separate even from minor parties.
That would be an acceptable concept to me. And there are other bills before this, which I think will be before this committee, about allowing minor parties to participate in the primary election rather than having their own processes, which are often pretty limited when it comes to involvement, and allowing them to have a place on the primary election ballot as well. But allowing NAVs to run in the people's primary is not a bad idea.
Is the name the People's Primary a material part of this bill?
Well, I first read this bill 2 or 3 weeks ago, so I'm not intimately involved in its drafting. I don't know.
To you?
To me, no.
So, if it could be called
your primary,
Madam Chair, may I follow up? So to you and the Progressive Party, or at least I should say to you as a member of the Progressive Party, you're advocating for a process by which non-affiliateds have a primary as opposed to what that primary is called?
Yes, sir, that's correct.
Just one last thing. Is there any irony in non-affiliated voters having a primary?
Not to my...
Is that the right use of ironic?
Not to my mind, you're Representative McLean.
All right, thank you.
All right, thank you very much. With that, I will close the public hearings on House Bill 2211.
I'm trying to remember the definition of irony.
I will...
Google it.
I thought he was, but I...
Do you want to do it?
There are two. He did one.
No. Right. I cannot speak for this.
All right. I'm going to go back to House Bill 2571.
And, Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2571 removes option for major political party to elect precinct committee persons or PCPs at primary election, allows major political party to determine how to select their PCP representatives.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Vice Chair Rayfield, Vice Chair McLean, for providing me an opportunity to talk about House Bill 2571. I thought there would be somebody here from the Association of County Clerks. Oh, good, somebody had joined me on this. Somewhat of perhaps a bill you don't see very often in this chamber, though I did bring it forward once before and didn't get primaried. So I brought it back fundamentally for the issue of fairness and the issue of cost to counties for running PCP elections on the ballot. And we're getting back to an issue that Representative Bueller actually brought up, is we have a lot of people that are non-affiliated voters and a lot of people that are in minor parties. And when we have precinct committee person elections run by counties, we have a lot of taxpayers who are in minor parties and non-affiliated, who I also represent in my district, who are subsidizing internal elections for major parties. So to me, that is, I just don't agree with that. I think our major parties, and now we're going to have, I think, three with the Independent Party, the Republican Party, and the Democrat Party running PCP elections through our county elections at the expense of all taxpayers. And I feel that those parties currently run their internal elections for their officers, and I see no reason why they can't select or run elections or however they choose to appoint their precinct committee people internally. I don't think it's a fair cost to the taxpayer, and that's why I bring this bill, House Bill 2571, forward. I realize it may cause some of the parties to have to change their bylaws on how they select their precinct committee people, but I think that in good governance, they should be doing those processes themselves and not at the expense of taxpayers. Simply what the bill is, and I'll turn it over to my counterpart, who I haven't met, but so perhaps you let him talk before you ask us a lot of questions.
Madam Chair, certainly. Is that better? Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Dag Robinson, Harney County Clerk. We're here today representing the Association of County Clerks and the Association of Oregon Counties today. The Association of County Clerks and the Association of Oregon Counties strongly urge your support for House Bill 2571. It is an elections efficiency and cost savings bill. Oregon taxpayers should not subsidize political parties. House Bill 2571 would repeal public funding of the election of local precinct committee persons, or PCPs, as they're commonly known as. PCPs are political party positions, not public offices. The bill would allow each major political party to select their PCPs in a manner they choose, not at taxpayer expense. Currently, only major political parties are entitled to have their PCPs elected, and only voters registered with a major political party can vote for PCPs. However, all Oregon taxpayers, regardless of party affiliation, subsidize these political party elections with county general fund tax dollars. House Bill 2571 removes the subsidizing of political party elections with public tax money. In addition, the current process of electing PCPs is highly inefficient. In 2016, there were 18,212 precinct committee positions on the ballot. After the election and acceptable write-in candidates, 14,179 of those positions still remain vacant. These numbers have been fairly consistent every 2 years at a cost of nearly $200,000 to taxpayers statewide. Last year in the 2016 primary election, of those 18,212 races, only six were contested, and leaving 14,179 remaining vacant is a waste of time and money for Oregon counties. The Association of Oregon Counties strongly urges your support of 2571. Any questions?
Questions. Yeah, Representative Brayfield.
Representative Hovey, if I'm to understand this bill correctly, you are effectively trying to limit the role of government here in Oregon, county government. Is that accurate?
Madam Chair, Vice Chair Rayfield, no, that's not accurate.
I was just going to comment to Representative Nose that would be the definition of irony.
I'm still not sure I get it. But.
All right, thank you. Bill Currier in South Rolta.
Well, kind of went off without a bang.
See you.
Nice to see you too.
Thanks.
Been
a while.
Hi, welcome.
Hi. I don't know where Sal is on this one, so.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Bill.
I guess we can sit next to each other anyway.
Sure.
All right. My name is Bill Currier, and I'm chair of the Oregon Republican Party. And, Chair Williamson and Vice Chair McLean and Vice Chair Rayfield and members of the committee, thank you for giving me a few minutes to talk about House Bill 2571. The bill itself is well-intentioned, I believe. The cost and workload for county clerks is something that should be addressed, and I'm sure it's something that they have struggled with for a number of years. However, the minimal savings that are achieved come at a high cost. And that's reduced civic involvement. The process of putting the election of PCPs on the public ballot is fundamental to civic involvement. It is what brings PCPs and voters together. It encourages potential PCPs to become interested in the party. It allows the public to see who they're selecting directly in a public process for the role of leadership in their party. To separate this and remove it from the public arena would, in effect, reduce civic involvement for these folks, many of which have not been involved in the political process prior to seeing someone's name on the ballot as a PCP or putting their own name on the ballot. So I believe that this public process ensures broad representation and should remain in place to properly oversee the process. Tangent to this is the replacement of public officials at the the legislative level, county commissioners, local office, by these same PCPs when those seats become vacant. Would we really want the process of selecting those folks that make those nominations being done outside the public view? I don't think that makes a lot of sense. There should be a public role, a government role in overseeing this process. The cost of $200,000 is minimal. It actually equates to about 9 cents per voter each election cycle. So to pay 9 cents per voter for each election cycle to keep that public involvement is a pretty small cost. It's a very small cost, and worth it to keep that involvement. This bill has been proposed in the past. I believe it was 2492 in 2011 and was rejected. And I would urge you to also reject it, primarily because it separates about two-thirds of the voters in our state from the selection process. I understand that minor parties, candidates are not represented in this process, but and you can say that we want everybody represented equally, but if this were to pass, it would, in effect, separate about two-thirds of those voters in the state from this process. So I'd urge no and welcome questions.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to testify today. For the record, I'm Sal Peralta. I'm the Secretary of the Independent Party of Oregon, and I'm testifying on behalf of the Independent Party and its 120,000 members statewide. The Independent Party supports House Bill 2571 to eliminate the option of major political parties to elect precinct committee persons at the primary election. Oregon is actually only one of a handful of states in the country that still does this, that still uses public monies to conduct those precinct committee person elections. We believe that it's patently unfair for the state to conduct elections that are essentially party positions, not public offices, while not doing conducting elections for public offices for third parties other than the Independent Party of Oregon. 2016 was the first time in the history of the state that a party other than the Democrats, the Republicans, had a spot on the primary ballot. But to date, no party other than the Democrats or the Republicans benefits from this particular precinct committee process. The precinct committee system was originally created as part of a broader series of anti-corruption reforms that were intended to break up the control of regional political party machines and to stop decisions from happening in smoke-filled rooms by a relatively small number of people. And certainly that's a good policy goal. But I just point out that there's no reason why the Oregon Republican Party or the Oregon Democratic Party couldn't have a completely open and transparent process of their own for conducting precinct committee elections. And to that end, I would point to the Independent Party's use of the Internet to conduct our state primaries as a minor party. That we've had now elections in 2010, 2012, 2014, and in 2016, we elected our officers that way. We had 1,700 people participate in the process last year. We've had as many as 5,000 people participate. For us, that is a far more democratic process than the precinct committee system, which limits representation of party members to 1 in 500 by statute. So it's a representative democracy within a political party as opposed to just allowing everybody to participate equally. And there may be very good rules for doing that, but I'd suggest that those are rules that are limited to the party's business, not necessarily to the people's business. And if the legislature does decide to stop using public monies in this way, I would encourage both the Democrats and the Republicans to not fall back to a smoke-filled room, but to instead open up their processes and take advantage of the Internet and other technologies that could open up that system. And I think you'd find that it actually creates a lot more outreach opportunities than the current precinct committee system does. The other point that I'd make for the record is that the committee should be aware that political parties are not required by Oregon law to comply with any of the provisions related to precinct committee statutes. So in other words, they can choose to not adhere to the requirements of conducting precinct committee elections and yet still benefit from the fact that these elections are happening. And in fact, the Republican Party has typically opted out of the PC, the requirements that are established in ORS 248007, subsection 4, and they opted out from 248002 to 248315. Those are basically all the provisions of the PCP statute that require notice and some other things. And I have letters which they send every year to the Secretary of State essentially opting out of those provisions and yet still benefiting from the PCP process. So, and that's not a criticism of the GOP. Those statutes are not enforceable because they violate the association rights of political parties. So they're completely optional to follow, and they're not followed by at least one of the two parties. The Independent Party, being the third party, chose not to participate in the precinct committee system for the reasons that I gave. So I hope that wasn't too confusing of a testimony, but that's essentially why we support the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I'm torn about this bill. I'm curious, though, were you not moved at all by the suggestion that when a vacancy occurs, the PCPs come together to, you know, decide who among our voters, you know, should be the three that are sent to county commissioners? I was sort of moved by that. Like, it seems like maybe we do want to know who those folks are. They've suddenly got more than just a party role. You know, they're actually helping to choose somebody who's going to be in one of these spots.
Chair Williamson, Representative Nose, the way the Independent Party would handle that would be we would open that up to all of our members in the district and conduct a primary to select those candidates, which we think would actually be more open than the precinct committee system. It's interesting, and folks who have been appointed by that precinct committee system will note that oftentimes when the PCPs get together and hold those meetings, they tally the votes based on the share of people who represent the district. So if it's one precinct committee person, they have a metric that says, okay, that person showed up to this meeting and they represent 787 Democrats or 787 Republicans. And that's how they talk about it. It's just, it's not as representative as it could be. I mean, you could, you know, political parties could simply open up a nominating process in the district and allow all of their members to participate by providing notice. So why not do it, you know, that way? They could do that by party rule.
So I went through a process of getting appointed. Actually, Barbara Smith Warner did too. I wish she was right here in the room. I do remember it was a whoever showed up got to decide, but it wasn't. You had to be a PCP.
Yeah.
And I think in part it was because of the role, but also because it was a little easier to verify. Like if we did in my district, any Democrat who wants to come and help pick, you know, like. In theory, we'd have to rent out the Coliseum or something like that. Maybe nobody would show up. Maybe it wouldn't be a big deal. But it's a very, you know, like, that's a very large swath of voters in my area versus, say, you know, I don't know about the independent party in my district. I don't remember what the registration is for that in House District 42. You know, maybe you could have a smaller meeting where everybody came, but that just seems equally unwieldy. And then if you had to do an actual mail-out ballot, you know, a mini primary, so to speak, that feels cumbersome to me as well.
And costly.
Yes, and costly.
Madam Chair, I just had a question for the county clerks again that may shed some light on this.
Good points.
Stick in between us.
Try to be neutral.
You're actually on our side.
Madam Chair,
I sort of understand the whole these point too.
No is the answer. So I think, Madam Chair, thank you. I think the point being made was the confusion that certainly the PCPs or precinct committee people that have a role in forwarding names for the county commissioners to select in a vacancy of an elected office for the legislature anyway. And that is that they get to put the names forward to a public elected body to make that decision. But the actual process of electing or appointing PCPs is really an internal process. I think that point was made, but I'm wondering, are there statistics at how many of the precinct committee people are actually elected versus appointed?
Madam Chair, Representative Holvey, I think the numbers I stated earlier of the remain 14,100 and something of them remained vacant after the election, meaning of the 3,000 or so of those candidates that received enough write-in votes didn't accept the nomination after they were elected by write-in, leaving those positions all vacant. So 14,000 remained vacant. Of those, they're all filled by appointment if they fill them. So I would say that those parties would be able to fill all those positions by appointment and still follow through with their nominating process like they do. There is an example in Gillam County where this occurred, a situation where Representative Nelson had mentioned. There were no Democrats, no Democratic precinct committee people elected. There was a vacancy in a county commissioner seat. Well, the party got together and organized themselves and then filled that position. So there's clearly ways that happens within the party. So they're taking care of that now outside of the election process by all means.
Madam Chair, the reason that you need to have more positions than you'll probably ever fill is so that you have the smallest unit of representation with the voters. It's a very important concept. If you have one representative for every 10,000 voters, you could reduce the number of PCPs dramatically. Right now we have a male and a female for every 500 voters. What that does is that ensures that the smallest of precincts get representation. If we try to, limit the total number, then we end up reducing that granularity or that broad representation. So it's I think it's important to keep the numbers. Also, I would argue, and I could be wrong, that the number of positions doesn't really affect the workload of the clerks. I mean, the yes, I mean, there's more actual positions to keep track of, but people file and run, and those are the ones they vote on. If they don't get filled, it doesn't. I don't see it creating significantly additional work. And even if it does create work, that $200,000 is minor in terms of civic engagement.
Just to follow up, I guess one of my points was that of those vacant positions, you know, many of them are appointed through some process that the party determines, and those names are then forwarded to county commissioners, is my understanding, where they certify those people as precinct committee people at that point. So I guess my point is that, you know, there is a process now that certifies precinct committee people without being on the ballot.
Yes, and on that point, Madam Chair, Mr. Currier, if I remember correctly, there are instances where elected precinct committee people are allowed to vote and appointed or not in certain activities, like I believe the selection of candidates.
So the selection of nominees to put forward to fill vacancies in office are only by elected PCPs. Cannot be done by appointed PCPs.
True. For Republicans.
For Republicans.
Oh,
for
Republicans. Yeah. 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 I'm a Democrat.
Sorry for that.
Thank you. Not to turn this into a debate, but that's a decision by the Republican Party to do it that way. They could do it a different way, you know. So, you know, I don't think that's really what we're speaking of. Precinct committee people are not publicly elected officials, and although they put the name forward for candidates, the county commissioners, publicly elected people, make the selection of who who replaces that vacancy. So again, I just want to stress that these are internal party functions.
Madam Chair, I guess I'd like to rebut that. I believe that when they are elected, they are a public official. By virtue of election, the precinct committee people are elected, and therefore they are a public person.
Madam Chair, I believe the statute makes it very clear that they're not public officials when they're elected.
What are they?
They're precinct committee people, party officials.
They're by definition, they're exempted as being defined as a candidate as well.
Yeah, I know that.
Mm-hmm. I would just, thank you, Madam Chair, just Representative Kammerer and I were having a brief conversation about this, because there is an argument that they are elected while they are only elected by their party folks, but thank you for that good information about, even though they go through that fairly public process, if in statute they are exempted from those other things, that clarifies that. So thank you.
And one last comment, Madam Chair. I will note that there was four people testifying in favor of this bill and only one opposed.
Madam Chair, but there were, in the written testimony, there were four against and two for. How's that?
And were they elected?
Oh, brother. Thank you.